This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. Today, I'm delighted to have in the studio with me the one and only Granny D, the great elderly activist who became famous when at 90, she walked across the country for campaign finance reform. She chronicles that trek in a book, Walking Across America in My 90th Year. Granny D is now 96, and in between, she also wrote a memoir, You're Never Too Old to Raise a Little Hell. Granny D, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you very much.
You burst on the scene in 1990 with that campaign finance issue, but you've been active in peace and justice issues long before that. How did you get started?
Well, mostly, if anything happened that I could do something about, I did. I didn't initiate anything, but I had a daughter who was very, very much aware of the fact that she was a girl, and her brother could go swimming through the winter time in the YMCA. The YWCA didn't have a swimming pool. They had a swimming pool, but they only used it on rare occasions. So she complained about this. And so I started a little campaign with friends of mine, asking them to write stories about it. And they did. And lo and behold, a man with more money than he needed started a swimming pool for the girls.
Were you a bit of a feminist yourself when you were growing up?
No, I was not. No, I was not interested in politics at all. Politics were dirty.
I heard you wanted to be an actress.
Yes, I did. Every time I seem to have had a very good memory, which I do not have now, unfortunately.
Neither do I, so don't worry about that.
But I loved to act, and every chance I got, I did. And so it became known in the small village in which I lived, that Doris Haddock would come and be a girl if you needed one in your woman's club play, for instance. And so I wanted to go to Emerson College, which was very famous for people who wanted to become an actress. And I was thinking of the stage. I wasn't thinking of movies because I knew I didn't have the stature or the looks for it.
But you wanted to go to New York, maybe.
That's right. And so in the end, I did go to Emerson for 3 years. And I never used it except direct plays at church. But when I became an activist, a real activist at the age of 90, when I initiated what I was doing, I found I was able to speak because I had been with Emerson for 3 years. And I knew if I pronounced the ending of my words, I was in. And I tell that to so many young people. They say, how can you become a speaker? And I said, that's what you do. You end your words. And if you listen to the good ones on radio and on TV, you'll see that that is what they do.
Now, tell me why you left Emerson. Why didn't you finish
it? I left Emerson because I married secretly and was betrayed by someone who was supposed to be my good friend. And my fiancé followed me. He had finished at Amherst College, and he followed me to Boston, where I was working, where I was studying at Emerson, and convinced me to get married on the weekend New Year's.
And Emerson didn't let married women?
No one. No colleges did. That was broken up after the Second World War, when the boys came home with the foreign bride and a GI Bill in their hand. And that's when the people began recognizing that it was all right for a man to, or a woman to, be married and still go to church. I've been sorry to college. Right.
Well, you almost made it all the way through. I'm speaking with Granny D. You're listening to Progressive Radio. Granny D. Doris Haddock, the woman who walked across the country when she was 90 for campaign finance reform. Granny D is now 96 years old. Now, you and your husband got involved in some anti-nuclear weapons work.
Yes, we did.
Tell me about that.
Well, we had a minister who was very progressive and always getting into trouble with his vestry because he was really too liberal and too progressive. But whenever he thought it was getting close to where they were and so unhappy with them that they would pitch him out, he would find another place to make an exchange with another minister. And in this case, he went to an Eskimo village, and he spent the summer there. And one group of parishioners took him up to Fairbanks, where you had to get into a plane. And I was in church one day, and they were asking for someone to jump in a car and go and get him. It was now time for him to come home. I think the parishioners were very happy to have him back. And so I went home to my husband, who was not much of an attendant, saying that you always have talked about the North Pole and how you would love to see what it was like. Now this is getting close. And would you like to go? Oh, yes, yes, yes. So we both got releases from our jobs and went. Drove all the way across the continent and up 1,600 miles on a dirt road to Fairbanks. And then took a little plane and then another one and landed in Point Hope, Alaska. In Point Hope, Alaska, they had lights. Each person had one bulb hanging down in actually, they lived in turf-covered houses. You know, when you read about Eskimos in the third or fourth grade, you know about the ice Eskimo.
The igloos, yes.
The igloos, right. And in this case, Point Hope had igloos, but they were covered with frozen turf. And it was very interesting. We spent a week there, and my husband worked for the Public Service Company of New Hampshire. So he was very interested in what was going on here. And when we discovered that the villagers were very upset because there was an experiment going on in a place called Oogatora Creek, and it was where Ed Tuller, who had been one of the scientists that discovered atomic energy, and he felt very, as did some of the others, very worried about the fact that they had released this power and what was going to happen to it. And he was looking for a domestic way for it to be handled.
Yes, he was immortalized as Dr. Strangelove.
Yes,
Edward Teller.
That's right. And his idea was to put a row of atomic bombs in a ditch, a deep ditch, and explode them and make a harbor for Point Hope, which would be closed for 3 months of the year, and they had no product in which they needed to send stuff out. But it was an idea, and somebody got sold to the AEC, and that's what was happening. And of course, the villagers were very, very upset, especially the young missionary who was there, who had a small child just newly born and had another 2 years to serve there. So my husband talked with the two scientists that were working there, and we agreed, as Eskimo when they exchanged the parishes, when my minister changed the parish with a young missionary, he brought two Eskimos down, and one of them was just my husband's age, and they got to be good friends, and my son taught my husband taught him how to drive a car.
And so,
we went back with them, and we worked for 2 years later, and were able to stall it with the help of these two scientists that were against it.
So you were able to raise a big enough stink that it didn't go forward?
Enough stink so that it was stalled. And then Kennedy came in, and they made the agreement with Khrushchev that no more underground, and the whole thing was stopped. Millions of dollars spent on it, all stopped.
Well, that's a good success story, though. You stalled just long enough. Then in the 60s, were you participating in the civil rights movement or the anti-Vietnam War movement, Granny D?
Not at all, no.
And so tell me how you got interested then finally in campaign finance reform.
In the year 1998, there was an article in the Boston Globe put in there by Common Cause with a small paragraph in it saying that in the middle of the night, two members of the House of Representatives put an additional subsidy to a tobacco company of $50 million. This bill was headed for Clinton to be signed. And I called Common Cause, "What in God's name is happening here?" And they said, "Oh, Doris, don't you know this corruption?" I said, "Not like this." And was it discovered? Well, of course it was discovered, but God knows how many that have gone through that were not. I said, "What can a person like me do something about this?" She said, "Work to get the campaign finance reform that McCain-Feingold bill is having. They've tried since Watergate, and they haven't been able to move it. If you could do that, you would be a help."
So what was your first step then?
First step was to set up a petition, which I had learned how to do from a lawyer friend when we were working on the atomic energy thing. You write letters to everybody, you make a listing of all the people that you know in other states until you get enough. Every state is covered, and it has to be with somebody who has agreed to do what you are going to do, and that is to get out and make this petition to be signed, to be sent to your senator. And after 2 years of work, we got letters coming back from the senators saying, "Dear little old ladies," because I had a group called the Tuesday Morning Academy, 19 of us who used to work very hard to get this started and nationwide. "Don't distress yourselves. We're going to pass the McCain-Feingold bill the next time it comes round." Well, the next time it came around was two months later, and again it was filibustered in the Senate, as it had been. The plan had been they would pass it in the House, because they knew that it would be filibustered in the Senate, as it was.
So that was frustrating for you, Granny D, to do all that petition work for 2 years and
yes, indeed,
to have nothing come of it.
That's right. So then my son was going to Florida in February, and he said it saved his marriage by going off for a month and to fish. He married somebody half his age. So, and he now the two of them have been taking care of me. I live with them now. And he said, "Come with me, you're depressed." I said, "No, I'm not." He said, "Come in and visit with your sister in Florida." On the way, we saw this old man who was walking along with a pack on his back. And I said, "What is that old man doing in the middle of nowhere?" And Jim said, "Oh, he's probably on the road again." And I said, "You mean like Willie Nelson on the road again?" He said, "Yes, yes." And it came to me, that's what I can do. So I said to him, I'd love to go across the country like that. And he said, Mother, people do that all the time. They walk for peace. And but you're 90 years old. And I said, yes, that's the idea. At the age of 90, if I walked across the country, wouldn't people be interested? He said, how are you going to do it? You're only living on Social Security and a small budget. I said, I'd go as a pilgrim. Walking till given shelter, fasting until given food. He said, but you need to have a cause. It's a waste of time not to go across without a cause. And I said, oh, I have a cause, all right. He said, oh, my God, campaign finance reform? And I said, yes. He said, well, if you do what I want you to do and get trained for it, I will let you go. I will let you go.
What was the training that he was suggesting for you?
I trained for a solid, well, it was about 9 months when I was able to walk 10 miles a day without thinking about it. I had been able to sleep on the ground in a sleeping bag all through the month of November, the snow on the ground part of the time. I thumbed my way for a day, 250 miles. Well, if they'd had a stable, he would have probably had me clean that up. We had no stable.
So it was not as though, Granny D, you just one day had this idea and you went to the West Coast and started walking.
No, at all.
It was premeditated.
And at the end of the year, and during that year, he insisted that I have to know where I was going. He figured 10 miles a day would be right. And I want you to know just where you're going to stay every night. So I got a route with the AA. And then I went to the library, and you can get directories of most every kind of sect, like the Methodists and the Episcopals and so forth, and find out who was living where. And I took I had a map made, and I took a little magnifying glass and found out all the little towns all along the route that they picked out, the AA picked out for me. And then I wrote letters to every single one of the churches, and we even had the name of the minister. It was right up to date. And I wrote to every kind of person or thing that I could think of to cover myself along those roads. I wrote to the chief of police in each little town. I wrote to the Sierra clubs, to the Appalachian clubs, to everything that I could think of that would be important. I never got an answer from a single person or club of any kind.
Ooh, that's amazing.
I spent over $500, but if I had then, people said, called people up, it would have made the difference. But I had already spent $500.
So how'd you find places to stay then?
Well, I carried a knapsack in my back, and I walked my 10 miles every day, I had three different routes, so it would be boring. I carried 29 pounds of a sleeping bag and 5 pounds of trail mix, on which I lived for a week. And
you must be sick of trail mix by now.
I knew that I was okay. And so my son agreed to let me go.
What were some of the most impressive things about the march for you? What are the things that stick in your mind?
Well, it was the people. The people, it didn't take very long before I was walking to a small town, and on each side of them, there were people standing waiting for me, saying, she's coming, she's coming. And they stopped, and people handed me their Bibles to sign. Everybody had to have a hug, and I never had a problem with where I was going to sleep or what I was going to eat.
Did you ever think, did it ever get rough or the weather so bad, or your feet sore or something that you thought, oh, I really bit off more than I could chew here?
And often. but I knew that it sort of feeds itself, you know. I said at the very beginning that I was going to do this, and people said, well, you're bragging, Dorothy. How do you think you could do this at the age of 90? And I said, I know I'm bragging, but this is what I want to do. And I find it very hard now, if you don't mind an interpolation. I knew that I would have to get press if I wanted to get an interest throughout the country. I would need press. And so every chance I got, I spoke. And but now I'm finding that difficult. My son keeps saying, stop your bragging, don't brag. But it's very hard because if you have to give out your message or tell about it, it's very hard because it's part of me.
Right. But it really wasn't about you. You were doing it not to aggrandize yourself.
I was
yourself.
Doing it because I had 16 great-grandchildren. And I said to myself, this is one hell of a legacy that we're leaving. And I'm 90 years old, and what does it matter? If I can do it, if I can just push it an inch, I'm going to do it. I have nothing else I need or have to do. Why not? And I had a lot of faith that it was the right thing to do and that somehow or other I would be able to do it. And somehow or other there was always someone there taking care of me if I had a problem.
You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine. It's my pleasure to be speaking with Granny D., Doris Haddock, who walked across the country for campaign finance reform. You pushed it more than an inch, I'd have to say. Doris, you helped, I believe, in the passage of McCain-Feingold. Did either of those senators acknowledge the work you did?
Oh, my guess. When they started to debate, 2 years after I walked my walk, 2 years later, when they really thought that they were going to get it this time. So I went to Washington, and I stayed there 7 days, and I walked around and around the Capitol the last 3 days of the Senate. This time, they started with the Senate, not the House. So I walked the last 3 days, night and day, although there was no one there except the cops. Here she comes. Come on, Granny D. So, but I was fortunate to have two different men, Ronnie Duggar from Massachusetts and Dennis Burke from Arizona. And they took turns walking with me. And we stayed in a little apartment with John, that was behind the library. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Supreme Court.
Okay.
And every hour I would take 10 minutes off to rest and change men.
You say in one of your books that there is a big lie that politicians utter and that media pundits utter this big lie that people don't care about campaign finance reform. And I've heard that many times when I'm debating someone on radio or TV, and the pollster or the pundit will say, well, if campaign finance reform were so important, if people really cared about it, we'd have it. But the people just don't care about it or don't care about it enough.
Yes, I saw one, I can't remember his name, but he's the man, the senator that you know has a wig on, very beautifully done. And he said, well, if she had to walk across the country, why didn't she pick something that means something to people that affects them every day, like education or help or something like that? And John put a big ad in the New York Times with the picture of him saying, is this man crazy or doesn't he know what is important in this country? I can't remember who he was.
Well, we ought to be able to get full public financing at some point, especially with these scandals this Abramoff scandal.
Well, of course, the saying was on our part that the McCain-Pangil bill would never have passed. It got very, very much stalled in the House. But Enron came to town. And that made it, suddenly, it was very important to get that thing passed. And now, and of course, now this is only my scenario, and I don't know how true it is, but it's the way it looks to me. When the act passed, Mitch McCullough from
Kentucky.
Kentucky picked up the mic and he said, "We have done a terrible thing." But later he recognized, he said, we'll find a loophole. We'll find a loophole. There'll be a loophole. And this is what they believed, that they would find a loophole. But delay, recognizing the fact that there is no loophole and that has teeth in it and that it's making a difference. That McCain-Feingold bill is making a difference. And so now with all this comeuppance, with people having stolen or taken money from Abramoff, they think it's okay. They'll just give it back or give it away to somebody that's lying homeless. But they have taken it. So I don't know why they think that we're so stupid as not to see that whether they give it away or not, they took it and that they're liable.
Giving it back won't wash their hands, really. Now, you're such an inspiration, Granny D, to people around the country. And I imagine you've got some insights about the age culture, what our culture says about people who are senior citizens. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, that's a serendipity that I got, because now people write to me daily and say, "You are my inspiration." And then they'll tell me what they were doing and not doing, and now what they were doing. I have one story after another. It's just wonderful. It makes you feel so good, because that is so important to so many people. I believe that myself, that you're not dead and ready to die at the age of 65. For some reason or other, that was what we were supposed to be old. And then you go back and you don't do anything more because you're too old. And people sit down and watch television and take life easy, and they're eating popcorn and they're eating crackers and cheese, and pretty soon they've got a little belly in front of them, and pretty soon it gets bigger and bigger, and they don't do any exercise, and they die. I mean, that's my scenario, of course. But to get up back on your feet and walk 2 miles a day, start with a small walk. And if you have trouble making it, count how many steps you have that it takes in a mile. And then start walking that mile. And pretty soon, and if you're having trouble with it, start counting. And you'll be amazed how fast it helps you and how easy it is really to walk a couple of miles. And it'll make all the difference in the world.
Granny D. Doris Haddock, I've got to tell you what a pleasure it's been for me to interview you today on Progressive Radio. For listeners who want to learn more about Granny D., you've got a website. It's grannyd.com. Isn't that right? grannyd.com. Thanks so much.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.